You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 27th, 2019. And surprise, there's a Google Stadia server farm in your closet.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alboy.
My name is Scott Chester.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humanist conversation about video games. We're back after life.
We did it.
They swept us away for a couple weeks. What happened was Google made their announcement. We were about to talk shit. Google pulled the cord on the internet for us. Targeted harassment.
Oh, man. The new world internet order has already gotten us down.
We're here to talk a little bit about some of the biggest news lately around video games, which, of course, I think is pretty obvious. The Google Stadia announcement that came out of GDC, I guess, last week.
Yep. I was, there was some life shit going on for me. And so I kind of disconnected. And then, as George said, when I reconnected, I realized that Google had launched its offensive to destroy video games as we know them.
That's right. I should say up front, big caveat, I do work for Ubisoft, which is a company that has a partnership around this Google stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know anything. In fact, I know less. I know fewer things than a lot of people. So just putting that out there. No hot scoops from yours truly.
You didn't check Eve's public calendar and was like, wonder what he's doing Weird. In Mountain View.
I have hot takes, not hot scoops.
I mean, I will say on the Ubisoft thing, it's just the Ubisoft MO of like, if there's a new platform, we're on it.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm fucking all on board, you know? Yeah. Like, if someone's going to be first to that, to toil in that rich soil, it might as well be us.
If the gold rush is gonna start, I'm gonna be out there with my pickaxe and
the problem is I'm gonna be the idiot on the front lines of how many like failed copper mines that go under, you know, where all it leaves in its wake is like syphilis and abandoned children.
I saw George go out there with his panning for gold and his pickaxe and his jeans and never seen him after
and
that.
never come back. All right, so Stadia. Where do you want to Stadia. Start?
Stadia is a
low-calorie sweetener.
God, how many jokes were there? Like, there must have been like jokes, backlash to the jokes, then reintroduction of the stevia jokes or whatever.
Well,
right?
I mean, just to clear the air, like I think that pretty much universally we can all agree it's a horrible name and a horrible logo, right?
I mean, it is pretty. I think Google has not necessarily, I'm not a huge fan of Google's like industrial design language period. And this just kind of is in line with their standard, like how Gmail looks now and how Drive looks now and everything.
That's true. It is kind of like they design all of their products to be recognizable as the logos in your taskbar.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a very, icon centric logo.
Yes.
Anywho, it's a Google. I mean, we knew that this was coming because both of us participated in the Project Stream beta last winter.
That's right. Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yeah, they did that, and they had been rumored. I mean, they had been making moves for a long time. They had been hiring people like Jade Raymond. I mean, Phil Harrison, I think, now works for Google. Like, there was just a lot of like traditional video game company high-powered people at Google now, and they revealed it. They revealed a streaming service for video games.
Man, remember OnLive?
Oh, no, but I mean, you know.
Those were the days, man. So yeah, so they announced their streaming video service. So my understanding is for Project Stream, for the test that was running, they were allowing you to try out the game at 60 frames per second and 1080p was the cap, I believe.
Yep.
This announcement was that they'll actually enable 4K at 60 frames per second.
Yeah. Yeah.
And up to 8K one day. Because they were like, look, we all know it's coming. You know it's coming. 8K.
They kind of were talking about 8K as in like, you know you're going to have to pay taxes next year, just like this year, so you might as well get used to it.
That's like, true. It's like, look, we know it's going to be Black Friday. You're going to be suckered into one of those fucking, you know, you're going to put your TV at a suboptimal viewing distance to actually appreciate your 8K screen.
We know you're going to have to buy a new house to appreciate your new TV, but you're going to do it anyway, so here we go.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a very, like, begrudging acceptance of the future. They are, for the plebs out there, though, they will say that the lowest resolution that they'll be running on is 720.
Oh, they're going to... I didn't even see that, so they're going to... They will offer it downscaled all the way.
Yeah, well, I would think that if your internet is so bad that it's going to be like a 480 experience, they're just going to be like, you know what? Nah, not today.
I guess, you know what? Even the varying resolutions make sense in that depending on what your device you're playing on, it might not even be a true 1080 screen. Like if you're on a tablet or a phone or something, those aspect ratios are kind of weird.
Yeah, because they did show them going from one device to another, like pretty seamlessly, right? All things considered. I don't know if that was a pre-recorded video that was running on all whatever 7 devices that they were running, but the idea that I could be playing at home, then on my way to work, I'm playing on my phone or something using my robust 4G network that's available on public transportation. And then while I'm at work, you know, I hide in a corner and play video games instead of actually doing work.
I mean, you joke about the video, but the craziest thing about this is that it is video because they're doing all the compute in the Google data centers. So basically what you're doing is just watching a stream of the content to your device.
That's true. Yeah, exactly.
That's
right.
That's the hardest thing to wrap my head around in that.
How it works?
Well, I mean, it's just a total paradigm shift in that the device is 99% meaningless in this model.
Yeah.
You know, you barely have to have any compute power on the local device. You have to have zero storage on the local device, like enough to hold a buffer of video, which is negligible. So it's just such a crazy paradigm shift from how we are used to playing even digital games, because digital games are at least downloading data and it lives on our hard drive somewhere. And this just does not exist in that way.
It's a real Silicon Valley disruption, Scott.
It is. I mean, it did make, I don't know, like how, so I watched a lot of the announcement, or I watched it after the fact that when they posted it to YouTube, I watched it, and I went back and forth between being extremely excited and kind of having this weird queasy feeling. How did you see any of this stuff, and how did you take it when you were watching it?
Yeah, I watched all of it. I find it personally enjoyable to just ask around, right? Because I feel like when you're at the office and you're talking to people, it's fun to get a sense of like, well, what are people talking about?
Right.
From my perspective, it's one of those things where, of course, this is exciting, right? Of course it is. Like, if the dream is delivered in full, in what way would you not be hyped, right? Because it means that people who cannot afford beastly machines may have access to games and experiences they would otherwise not have had, you know?
Right.
Or I don't necessarily have to worry about playing my games on my hardcore PC if I'm traveling or if I'm on a plane or if I'm doing whatever, you know, and have, you know, I have my laptop with me. I could still keep playing Sekiro, which is what I'm playing right now, right? And I don't have to worry about, like, having my whole rig with me. That is exciting. And as a kid, like, especially thinking back as a kid, right? When I was significantly younger and upgrading my PC was basically an impossible task, right? Like I knew where my limit was. I knew the games that I could barely chug on my PC, and that was the hard cutoff. And and when a new game came out, I was checking the message board, seeing like, hey, will my PC actually run it? Because I have to do the math in my head of like, well, you know, if I buy it and my PC doesn't run it, then it's going to be shitty and then I'm not going to be able to play it, or it's going to be a subpar. Like that's a bit of homework that was not fun or enjoyable. So if it means that there are kids out there like I was that are saying, you know what, I can run this on my PC no problem because all I need is a stable internet connection, awesome. But
that's a very optimistic way of looking at it, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, I think it's important to be said, right? Like, there, of course, There's a reason for people to be excited. I also have major trepidations that other people in my immediate circle didn't share, primarily what this means in terms of the relationship between Google consumers and ISPs.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we don't exactly have a glut of options here in the Bay Area. Comcast will throttle internet during peak usage hours. Those same peak usage hours are roughly aligning with the times that I like to play my video games.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that question is huge. And there, we can say, look, all you really need to do is be streaming video. But when you're talking about, especially when you're talking about 4K, 60 frames per second, you're using a good deal of data, right? If your neighborhood caps, if your ISP, excuse me, caps your bandwidth usage, right? Then that 4K content, in addition to whatever else you happen to be streaming in your life from Netflix and, you know, the way that we consume media in this day and age is largely by streaming. It's streaming YouTube videos, streaming Twitch, streaming Netflix, streaming Hulu, streaming YouTube, streaming Spotify, right? Or whatever music platforms you use. That's all consuming data the entire week, right? When you hit Friday and you're like, fuck yeah, it's time to play some video games. And then you hit your monthly cap because you're fucking using like, you know, I don't know, 5 to 10 gigs an hour streaming 4K content, you're going to be a pretty pissed consumer if that's suddenly scaled down to 720 because you hit your cap.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a solution for you, but it's even a worse, it is a darker future. To stay on the, well, before I do that, I will reinforce your optimism of just making the hardware meaningless is nice from a convenience and also, like you put it, the an accessibility state where maybe you don't have room for like the crazy PC, maybe you don't have the time and or money to do it. I definitely agree with you having, you know, even as easy as PCs are to build these days, it's still a real pain in the butt. And not only that, it's a real pain in the butt to keep all the damn drivers updated and to like troubleshoot. Oh, well, it looks like my RAM is bad, so that means the whole thing is going down. Like that's real annoying. I think it also throws a major monkey wrench into this whole idea of like, are we going to have to buy mid-cycle consoles for the rest of our days? Like, you know, the PS4 Pro or the Xbox One X, like if things just iteratively get better as the server technology and the data centers get cheaper and more scaled out, then that's great. It also, for some developers, it's probably really nice because you don't have to test against a million different configurations when you're making a game, which must be extremely nice. Getting back to your point around bandwidth, one, I think Google is probably pretty good at compressing and delivering video content efficiently.
That's true.
Two, what's actually going to happen is they're going to strike deals with the ISPs to zero rate their data, and we're going to be charged more for our internet and a cable TV like bundle.
Okay, so worse.
Yeah, far worse. Yeah. Like, I want to be optimistic and say that this, I mean, this is a great argument for net neutrality in that
we're just having
more and more and more content flowing through the internet, and it has become something like electricity or water. However, the government refuses to do jack shit about this, and the ISPs refuse to have any shred of like humanity. So what they'll do is ask Google to basically pay them a bunch of blood money so that Google data doesn't get counted towards consumers' caps, and in exchange they will just charge consumers a special bundle where it's like, you bought the gamer pass of Comcast, therefore $10 a month more will give you unlimited Google Stadia data.
Yep.
Like, that is what's gonna happen.
Fuck. Oh, I mean, and you know it's gonna be marketed that way too, like the gamer pass. Yeah.
Yep. And that's the thing that I think some people, those are the implications that aren't apparent when you're just watching a cool stage demo where it's like, oh, sweet, I am watching the acceleration of corporatism right now.
Yeah. And it's interesting because what I was hearing from people when I was bringing up this bandwidth thing as well was, oh, well, this incentivizes Google to lay more Google Fiber and make fiber more accessible.
Which is not the cheapest way to solve that problem. Therefore, Google will not do it that way.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. And, you know, this is coming, what, I think 2 weeks ago, Google announced they were ripping up their fiber lines that they laid in Kansas City, right? So they've already done the consumer math to decide where fiber is and isn't worth it for laying that reliable line down, right?
Yep.
So it's not going to be as simple as saying, oh, well, Google will be the savior that comes in to be our new ISP.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, and that's to say nothing about whether or not you want to give Google an even larger slice of the pie that is everything that we do
totally
in existence, right?
Yep.
They just cannot feasibly be that savior for large swaths of America.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a whole other thing of like that we can get into later around just I listened to this other podcast called Pivot.
You listen to another, you fucking traitor.
Yeah, this is where I get all my cool economic insights from. But like Kara Swisher, who has been like a longtime journalist, especially like in the technology space for like the Times and a bunch of other areas, does this thing. And she's on with an academic. And one of the things he said a while ago, his name's Scott Galloway, is I forget the terminology he used, but like he was saying that one of the most powerful things to control is the chain of command between having an idea and activating that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the idea, like you have a question and then you activate your action towards that question. And basically all of that today is controlled by basically Google and Facebook. Like if you have an idea, what's the first thing you do? You go to Google to like start vetting out if that idea is good, if you should build a business or for Facebook, if you should like build a friendship connection around this. Slides
between buildings to make it easy to travel from one skyscraper to another.
Yeah, boring underneath the earth to bypass the freeway, whatever. But like everything that you think about and then decide on doing is probably in some way mediated by 2 to 3 very large companies. And that is a fucking scary thing to think about because they control the results that come up when you search something.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, what do you do? Like if someone says like, how do I build a media business? What is the first result? Is it like how to build a business plan and how to be an entrepreneur? Or is it how to get started on YouTube? And there's a huge difference between those two things, even though they're theoretically attacking the same problem.
Yeah.
And the latter is highly beneficial to the platform holder.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's like now we're running even more shit through Google and it's like, fuck, like it's just a lot to offload to one corporation.
And you can see the sort of closed ecosystem that they're creating when they talk about the YouTube integration, which, I mean, again, I think with optimistic glasses on is super exciting. I think the idea of being able to watch a trailer and then click play and immediately go into experiencing, say, an open beta of the game.
Yeah.
Awesome. And as from a marketing perspective, is a huge opportunity because it means that you can provide people immediate access to actual gameplay experiences without having to leave an ecosystem, right? Like that makes a lot of sense. But you could see why if you're, a streamer that makes a living on Twitch, how all of a sudden you can go, oh man, where's the right path forward here? Should I start making YouTube content? Should I be streaming on YouTube? Yep. Like, what does that environment look like in the future, right? I imagine to some extent Twitch is thinking, oh man, that sucks that we don't have a megalomania company that we can then lean on for the execution of a huge idea like this, you know?
Well, except they do because they're owned by Amazon.
That's true, yeah, that's touche.
And
in that sense, like, I think a potential other optimistic reading of this is that it lights fire under other competitors. And then before you know it, that is what this future is. It's just a variation of competing streaming services, which is what we have for television now, right? Like you have Netflix, you've got Hulu, you have Amazon Prime. I could easily see a scenario going where 10 years down the line, the conversation about, what platform you're using to play your video games is really about what streaming platform do you subscribe to access them.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that gives Google an advantage here is that there's basically 3 companies in the world that have a true massive well, four entities in the world that have a true massive cloud infrastructure: Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, with the wild card of the United States government.
Yeah.
So it's like, even if you were, and the nice thing about streaming services is that you use AWS to do it. Like, dude, Netflix uses Amazon to power its platform.
Right.
And so, and streaming services, you know, video is, a movie is inherently less complicated because there's no interaction with it, except if you're, you know,
yelling at the screen and throwing popcorn.
Well, what was that thing? The Black Mirror, the blunder block or whatever. Yeah. What was that?
Bandersnatch? Bandersnatch.
Bandersnatch, yeah. The Bramble Pelt.
The Blunder. Blunderbuss.
So it's like, one of the compelling things about the Google presentation was they were basically like, we have so many data centers. And they basically just showed how they've, like, in a Zerg-like way, taken over the entire planet with their various Google data centers and, like, edge networks and so forth. And so it's like, if you are a small streaming service like Gaikai or OnLive or whatever, you don't have your own infrastructure. So you are beholden to whoever owns those roads. And so, and if those people that own those roads are not forced to make them open, like the government makes our physical roads open, then they can basically do whatever the fuck they want to you on those roads and then not penalize their own traffic. So it's just this crazy amount of power that a very tiny amount of companies have.
It's a scary road, Scott.
It's terrifying. like thinking about the modern internet and technology landscape is an exercise in staring into a crazy cyberpunk future.
Okay, so on the let's go back to the sunny side of optimism. All right,
let's go back to the sunny side of life. Here we go.
Net neutrality law passes.
Oh, thank God.
How do you feel now? Are we better?
Oh, I feel fucking great. Well, I mean, it is great because you can at least then take the zero rating argument out of the equation. It will still be, I mean, I think you have to take it one step further. Like, you, and this is where things get real crazy, but, you know, you have to start breaking up the big tech companies like Google.
Yeah.
Because it's still, unless
next week, special guest Elizabeth Warren.
Right, exactly. I mean, like, and people are starting to kind of edge around the idea of doing it, but
yeah, of course.
They would still own the roads, and they have no legal obligation to make it easy for anyone else to use those roads. And so that would have to be your next step. Net neutrality would be a huge step forward for sure. And so I would definitely be optimistic if that happened.
Hmm.
How optimistic are you for actually playing games on this damn thing?
I mean, well, like you said, if you look at a map of Google's infrastructure, it's like one of those shitty congressional maps, you know, where like all the places there are not are like flyover states. So I do pay more for a better internet connection. It is very reliable. I will pay a premium. If Comcast says, hey, George, we got those gamer freeways open up to you.
Right.
Right. I'm going to be honest. I will probably pay for them. You know,
right.
Write that.
Well, you don't have
any
other choice if you want to use the service like that. It's, you have no comp. There is no competition for you from which to choose from.
Well, Sonic just laid fiber lines in my area, so I may be making a switch. I know.
What? Does that come all the way up to my area?
That's a very good question, actually. Yeah, you should look into it.
It's so frustrating that George and I live approximately 4 miles away from each other.
Oh, they might as well be different planets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the ISP gerrymandering is that extreme.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. So there may be a possibility that I would even potentially switch to get more consistent and reliable high speed internet in my area.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I would absolutely see myself being able to use it. Now,
right.
All of this conversation about like the basically the social ethics of of a service like this and the infrastructure and context in which it operates, all of that aside, right? Google didn't talk about a price point at all. I do have a beastly rig that can run most everything in 4K, probably 60 frames per second, depending upon what game.
Right.
Or conversely, I'm playing on my television, which doesn't do well. I mean, it does 4K, but it's not an experience that I would 100%, I guess, necessarily need. So I cannot imagine feeling the need to rush out to do this, right? Mm-hmm. If I didn't have a high-powered PC, or if I didn't have a next-gen console, I could certainly see myself considering it. So for me, I think in terms of whether or not it's something I would use, a lot of it just depends on the price point, and we have no idea. I mean, they didn't even announce what sort of pricing model it'll be. Like, we don't have an answer to a very basic question: will I own the games that I buy?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it was funny. I was actually reading a short little blurb interview from Eves, and they were asking him, like, they basically asked him, like, how are you going to pay for this?
Yeah.
And he was like, and he basically said, there's many options. Maybe you buy them, maybe you subscribe, maybe it's some sort of hybrid. And I fully expect them to do something like that.
A hybrid system?
Yeah. Well, they'll do like, they'll do a thing where this is just a subscription. It's like a Netflix style, all you can eat. Maybe they'll tier it. So like, you know, first run games, you subscribe for this level, you know, second run games, like they have to be out for 3 to 6 months, you can subscribe at this level.
And then it's what, like a Spotify model where like, depending on what you play, gets a share of your monthly revenue?
I mean, the back end is a whole nother crazy thing, because at least with the current consoles, my understanding is that even if they give games away for free, like on PlayStation Plus or whatever, they compensate developers based off of purchases. Even if, right. even if it's a purchase for $0, there's some sort of agreement worked out that you will get paid X number of dollars per download or per digital purchase.
Right, right.
But if it's a fucking stream, then everything goes out of the window. Like, do you compensate people based off of unique player counts? Do you compensate them based off of time?
Yeah.
Are you going to have to, even as a developer, like, the cloud sounds fancy, but it's just a bunch of computers somewhere in the world generating heat. Like, that costs Google money. So if you have a very intensive game like The Witcher, you're costing Google more money to run that shit than you are Ape Out. And so if you're a developer of AAA games, do you have to pay Google more to even host that service on their system? That's a
good question. Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, like, do you need to share revenue with them, because people will be still running the exact same level of computing power, but exactly, at increasingly lower costs or price, I guess, to you?
Is there a scale issue where if you run a massively multiplayer game, is that more taxing? Do you pay more there? Are there breaks for like independent developers? I mean,
will the servers get so hot they can cook a burrito even God couldn't eat?
Easily. I mean, there's just so, like, every, I mean, the word disruption gets thrown around a lot these days.
But woo howdy. Move over, Elizabeth Holmes. We're in it now.
I mean, seriously, though, like, this is a truly disruptive business model for how we historically have interacted with games from everybody's perspective. Yep. From the publisher's perspective, from the developer's perspective, from the player's perspective, from the platform holder's perspective. It's all uncharted territory. And basically, everything is up for grabs. Like, I would also imagine, going back to the economic setup of the whole thing, maybe there's a thing where you don't subscribe, but you can just buy games a la carte, where it's like, yeah, I want to buy Sekiro, so I'll pay $50 and I'll have it in perpetuity on Stadia.
Man. Well, so what model would you be happy with? Because, like, I could envision something where it says, look, you know, we have to have everyone pay some minimum amount to just pay for the, and basically what you're doing is subsidizing the cost of running the infrastructure in the first place.
Yep.
Let's say $3 a month, like a pittance, right?
Right.
But then you have to also, on top of that, buy all of your games. But because we know you're contributing $3 a month, you know, whenever you buy a game, you get it, because you're not buying an actual physical thing at all, we'll give it to you for $10 less.
Right.
You know, $50. Right. For a $60 game, or 50, which is kind of what Amazon is already doing with pre-orders and Amazon Prime, right? So they choose to swallow that cost. Yeah. Or every time you buy the game, you get 1 month free for every $30 you buy, or every $10 you buy, you get a dollar free worth of Stadia credits, right?
Dude, so that if you gotta think darker, man. It's not gonna be that. It's gonna be for every 100 people that watch you stream this game,
oh, we fuck, will give dude. You a discount. That no, that. I refuse like, that. That's too much, man. Like that is definitely that's a no go. Yeah, like X number of views on YouTube.
Totally. Like you gotta think darker. Like you have to think like pure exploitation of humans as a product to a technology platform. Like that's how they're gonna do it.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, maybe they'll say, look, it's $1 a month if you share with us all of your consuming habits.
Yeah, exactly. Link your accounts. Hook us into your other. Yeah, link. We made a Stadia app for your TV. Can you please install it there? We made a Stadia app for your phone. Can you please install it there?
I mean, now we're getting into some Black Mirror shit. This is less optimistic. I want to go back to the optimistic, Scott. $1 a month. All the games are one for free.
I mean, I think me personally, I think I would. I would be into the idea of having a kind of like a baseline small subscription with the option to purchase games I know I'm going to play a lot.
Yes.
Because just realistically, I just don't know how many hours I can devote to playing games. So the whole like the full Netflix style might not even be worth it for me.
Yeah.
But it might be worth it for like. You know I can definitely play Ape Out, and I know I want to play Sekiro for a long time, so instead of locking myself into a subscription, I'll just buy those direct and it'll work out better.
Well, what would you do though if, say, you could buy them direct but there was a very small monthly fee to keep your Stadia service active? Like you would own Sekiro. Yeah. It's basically if Steam had a fee to run Steam at all.
Yeah. I mean then I could justify it by saying, well, maybe I'll never buy another PC, or maybe I won't buy a PC. Maybe I won't upgrade my PC once every few years, but like once every 5 to 7 years or something.
Right.
Or maybe I'll never buy another console. I mean, the other thing is Xbox is really looking to do this as well. Like they are full bore into making Xbox into a service versus a box. And so there's a reality, a not too distant reality, where maybe Xboxes themselves don't really exist in the way we think of them anymore. So that just might be a more normal thing. That's like, oh, I only buy a console once every 10 years or something.
Right.
Crazy. In which case $3 a month or $5 a month is like amortize that out over the cost of a video card. That's like multiple years worth of service for the cost of one video card.
I mean, that's a very good point. Like in terms of the actual cost, if you're thinking at all about getting a PC versus using this, then it's kind of a no brainer.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, you know, the idea of upgrading things or even like, you know, the idea of a service or, yeah, you know, it's just, there's just a lot of things that we could bundle up into a subscription that we would normally pay for, you know, a la carte.
So let me ask you this. Netflix has a model where if you want to stream in 4K, you pay a premium.
Yep.
Do you think that model would work? And is that something that you would pay?
I mean, I guess it just depends on the, it really depends on if you invest in that hardware. I mean, right now I wouldn't because I don't have a 4K TV.
Well, but what if it was like, I mean, I don't think they're going to do this, but what if it was like a dollar more if you want 60 frames per second?
Right, right. Well, I mean, you could, you know, you could see something like that happening because that stuff is probably, there's a cost somewhere along the line. Yeah, it's tough when you start...
I mean, double the frames, double the monthly price, you know?
Well, that's what
I was thinking. It's simple logic.
If I was a developer, I would be kind of pissed off about that because then it's really hard to control the experience a player is having.
Yeah.
Because it's tied up in their economic decision versus their just straight up video game purchasing decision,
yeah.
Which I think would piss off a lot of developers. But I don't know. Hopefully they wouldn't do that. But I could see maybe on the high premium features where... You know, if there is like an 8K option or something like that, or, maybe you want it to be multiple devices simultaneously, you know, more than three devices simultaneously, you can pay a premium for kind of like Netflix or something.
The one model that we didn't talk about that to me is the most unpleasant version, if this exists, is an ad supported model.
Oh, yeah.
Because what I don't want is to be playing Sekiro and having like, a YouTube ad pop up, you know, even if it's a lower third, right?
Yeah.
or some other sort of integration where I'm feeling as though I'm getting this disrupting experience while I play.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I don't think they'll be able to get away with it on top of a game. Like, it seems like that would just be a bridge too far.
Yeah. You know? I mean, their ad networks are so sophisticated at this point with the data that they've collected, though. It's hard to imagine them not having some sort of ad-supported model with this.
Well, I can imagine pre-roll. Like, you get a link to a game and you click on it and it's like, oh, you are a Stadia Standard subscriber, not a Stadia Premium subscriber, so have fun with this one-minute ad before you play your game.
Oh, God.
But what I actually think is more accurate or more likely is that they will monetize in a much more seamless, potentially disturbing way through YouTube. You know, you will be watching streamers that are getting paid or doing content deals or will be getting paid off of the number of people watching them. You know, like, I feel
But that already exists. Media play. It's just Google isn't doing it.
Exactly. And this will be Google's big thing because they already have the world's premier video platform. Now they're just bringing it to bear in a more active way.
Yeah.
And they already have the top streamers out there. I mean, like, they, what is it with the fucking YouTube voice? We always make fun of it too, but like the minute that guy got on stage, I'm like, oh, this is a YouTuber.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, they already have those people essentially on payroll, even though they have no benefits or rights or anything.
Right.
And so they have like an army of quote unquote influencers that they can also use to basically sideways advertise to you.
Yeah. And again, I mean, from their perspective, that makes perfect sense, right? Like, if you're watching someone play and they're your favorite streamer and you can click play. Well, and then we didn't even talk about the ability to play with them. Like, I mean, again, putting on my optimistic glasses, that is actually pretty cool. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, how fun would it have been if, like, when we were streaming Spelunky, people could have jumped into the moment right before shit went sideways and see if they could have gotten out of it where we couldn't?
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been cool.
Be so fun.
Yeah. Yeah, plus they could theoretically do that if they're like saving their, you know, the moments and have them immediately playable like that.
Yeah, I mean, you could imagine the deals where even with celebrities, it could be like, "Oh, can you beat Drake's time in Mario Kart?" Like, it's so easy. Like, just download this state and like see if you can play against him, you know? Like, it's
I mean, I could definitely beat Drake's time in Mario Kart, just putting that out there.
Drake's probably the type of guy that uses Wario or something.
Yeah, come on. So before we wrap up, any last thoughts about two more elements that I thought was interesting? One, the Google Assistant voice command stuff, because that felt very Kinect to me.
Yeah, it did feel a little tacked on, but I mean, they're super investing in it, so I guess it makes sense that it would have to have something.
And the new controller?
It seems like a controller, you know?
We've pretty much mastered controllers at this point. I feel like we have that on lockdown.
Yeah, until...
Except for Nintendo, who just does not care.
Yeah, exactly. Until the Leap Motion upsets the entire notion of what a physical device is or whatever. I mean, you know, it seems a relatively solid thing. It has all the buttons in the right places, I guess. I'd be interested to... I like just getting hands-on with new controllers. Like, I think it's fun. Like, yeah. I would be interested in seeing that. But yeah, that was kind of, I don't know. Did you have it? I don't even really know any of the specs. You know, one thing actually around the controller is that, did you catch that they said that the controller itself was Wi-Fi, so it was connected to the internet?
No.
So they were saying that the controller sends its inputs directly to the internet, which helps with the latency problem.
That's interesting. I actually really like that idea as well, just because it's a huge pain in the ass to recalibrate my controller based upon what console I'm using.
Yep.
But being able
claim that you could go from screen to screen without having to like unsync and pair the controller, because if the controller is connected to the internet, it's connected to the stream, not the device.
Yeah, it's connected to the service. Yeah.
Right. Which I thought was a very clever way of doing it. It just means that your controller is connected to the internet, which means when it becomes sentient, it's even more deadly to you, though.
Yeah, that way you can get a DDoS attack on your controller.
Yeah, the Internet of Things, like my my controller can now be part of the Russian botnet my laptop is part of.
Man, why is my controller consuming so much internet bandwidth today?
I can't believe my controller just mined a Bitcoin.
Oh, dude, hey, man, sign me up if there's a dollar to be made. Okay, so on a scale of 10 being so hyped, super optimistic, and 1 being like incredibly skeptical, the Hive overlords are coming, where do you fall?
Well, I need to break out those two things because I am both a very hyped but also very skeptical.
It just comes full circle, actually. So you're right at the top.
I mean, I would say I'm like, well, if you combine those two axes, I'm like right in the middle, because one thing we didn't even talk about is the entire notion of owning games is destroyed by this thing.
Yes, also true.
It's like, how do you preserve a game? Like, what happens to game history at this point?
Yeah. I did mention that to coworkers, and they didn't seem especially concerned. But
people aren't worried about it until it's too late. It's kind of like film. Like, we don't have a lot of stuff from the early days of film.
Yeah.
And like, the same shit's going to happen where it's like, oh yeah, it would be nice to play, you know, the original version of Sekiro, but oh whoops, it doesn't exist anywhere. You know,
I mean, they'll just re-release it like Blizzard's vanilla WoW.
Right. Yeah. I mean, everything will become a service rather than a historical artifact, which, you know, if you're like an old-timey old man like me, is bad for human culture, but maybe good for economics.
You know, it would actually be interesting to know if it were possible to have a model where you could download it if you wanted to, but you could also have the streaming service, you know? Because then, to me, that would be the best of both worlds, because then I could download the game on my PC as needed, and if my Wi-Fi sucks that day or someone's watching Netflix, I can still play in 4K. But if I'm on the go or if I'm at work, I can then play the exact same game using the exact same file without having to download it, figure out my save system, all that stuff.
I mean, that's why I'm honestly more optimistic about Microsoft's approach to this, because Google has no incentive to make sure that PCs survive.
Right.
Whereas Microsoft definitely has an incentive to ensure that PCs survive, because they're also trying to run Windows. Right. And so,
and Microsoft Excel.
Hey, everything needs a hard drive. Like, everything that Microsoft does tends to need a hard drive, and nothing that Google does needs a hard drive. And so if you're in the hard drive game, Microsoft could be like, hey, look, Microsoft is cool. We're cool with streaming. We're also cool with local. And so we would let you do that. Whereas Google, it's like, why? There's no incentive for Google to allow people to save anything to a local space because they don't control it.
That's Whereas
like, if Microsoft lets you do that, they might not control the data, but they still control the operating system. They still control the OEMs that make your computer. Like, they're still getting money off of the fact that you can download something, whereas Google has zero incentive to allow that. And so I'm more optimistic in Microsoft's potential approach to that.
Yeah, they're all cloud all the time.
Exactly. Whereas Microsoft still lives in this world and will continue to live in this world of desktop for at least another decade or two.
Wow, only a decade on the small side.
Hey, man, I'm on the razor's edge over here.
All right. Well, cool.
How about you? You didn't say your hype levels.
I'm kind of right there with you. You know what I mean? Like, both sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my hope is that one does not kill the other. But I'm also, you know, like, look, people are still buying vinyl, right? So
Right. Yeah.
But I'm also not so dumb as to think that this isn't, as you said, a very disruptive, groundbreaking service that could fundamentally change how we buy and play games.
Yeah. And also, it's not, let's say, against all odds, this is their next Google Plus and this fails, right?
Yeah.
Microsoft will try again, or Amazon will try again. You know, this will happen. Someone will figure it out. And if for whatever reason, you know, Google is the frigging Golden State Warriors of internet infrastructure. If for some reason they lose, someone else will succeed.
If they become the Lakers.
Exactly. If Google turns into the Lakers, then Microsoft will step up or Amazon will step up. And it will happen. It's just, it just depends on, who gets there first. What? And Google has made a very good strike. I mean, they say this thing's out this year. You know,
I just wish the first horse of the apocalypse wasn't named Stadia, you know, something more exciting. Beelzebub, you know, like, there's other options out there.
Yeah. I just wish, the, the first Horseman of the Apocalypse wasn't wearing a hoodie and Allbirds.
Yes.
Know?
Oh no, dude! It was like, what was the suit of choice at the Stadia press conference? Was a pastel T-shirt and a suit jacket.
Yeah, totes cash. Totes Silicon cash. Valley cash.
All right.
Hopefully we haven't bummed people out too much, but if we have, commiserate with us, experiencepoints@gmail.com.
And experiencepoints.net, you can find all our podcasts streaming online, but through a variety of services of your choosing.
Yeah, yeah. Until the Google bots come for us, we're here. Pirate exactly. Podcast.
Pirate Podcast.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.